Hi there, and welcome to issue number 74 of Jim Brown's Outrake Capercast. After my flight of fancy into the ancient future in our last issue, number 73, I rather expected a howl from you listeners about me just going over the top. But that howl has not been heard, mercifully. So one of these days we'll have another look back from the future at modern lightweight seafaring. But this time we'll look back only as far as last week, when I had a chance to go back down to Greensboro, North Carolina, and work with my old pal Andy Zimmerman on pedal power. Now, this does relate to the ancient future when I spoke of getting 200 passengers in a hybrid ship to pull the pedal power units out from under their seats and assist in getting a jumbo jet-sized sailing passenger ferry to fly out through its takeoff window. Now, this really is quite fanciful because, the ordinary human being can only deliver only about half a horsepower. So 200 passengers could only deliver maximum 100 horsepower. And that's all that would be necessary. Maybe 15 seconds of hard pedaling would pop that baby up onto its hydrofoils, which might not matter much with a big sailing hydrofoiler to overcome its real disadvantage of spending too much time not flying. Of course, we cannot now know what a hybrid ship of that era, say 150 years from now, would be using for auxiliary power. Heck, by that time, humanity may have solved the energy problem with something like hydrogen or atomic fusion or something that we can't imagine. But we can imagine having lots of electrical power on board of a vessel like that. The way we see it now, the whole top of the superstructure would be covered with solar panels. There's likely to be great improvements in battery storage by then. And the wonderful thing about electric motors relative to internal explosion engines is that the electrics can draw an enormous amount of power very quickly. That's why some of today's electric cars are such demons on the drag strip. They can suck a whole lot of power out of their batteries before you know it, before a modern gasoline engine can even overcome the inertia of its flywheel. So electric power does speak well for auxiliary use in sailing hydrofoils because in light winds, they will require a great burst of auxiliary power in order to make them fly, get them up off of the water and flying on their foils. As I've said, it's like a modern jet aircraft, which requires that same great burst of power to get off of the ground and up to altitude. But once it's there, it can run out its distance rather efficiently. Nevertheless, with literally thousands of aircraft in the air all the time worldwide, it's clear that, if climate change and atmospheric contamination really does prove to be a problem, that we're going to have to stop flying, at least frivolously. I think the airlines contend that they only account for something silly like 6% of total fossil fuel usage. That number sounds like PR to me. But I suppose it doesn't matter much until the atmosphere becomes so opaque that it triggers another ice age. Or, of course, it could go the other way. The ozone layer stops protecting us from solar radiation and the planet gets fried. But if indeed pedal power does prove to be a useful adjunct to human survival at some point in the future, I would like for those future beings to understand where pedal power came from in the first place. So here we are, back to bicycles and my trip to Greensboro last week. Now, Greensboro is a nice, formerly industrial town in western central North Carolina, formerly the furniture manufacturing capital of the United States. And still a marketing center for furniture, although the manufacturing, of course, has all moved off to China. But starting back in the late 1980s, some of that manufacturing loss was filled in by paddle sports, kayak manufacturing. There are some really wild rivers in the area, so kayaks started out in that region as whitewater boats. And extreme whitewater kayaks were called squirt boats. They had to be custom-built for the size and weight of the paddler. Even to get into them, the guys had to point their feet and jam them up into the bow. The boats had so little displacement that they really wouldn't float the paddler unless he was moving. And that's what gave these so-called squirt boats the ability to go underwater, way underwater. And there were a couple of squirt boat pioneers in the area, Andy Zimmerman and John Shepherd. And with their elaborate rubber skirts, they could seal off the kayak around their bodies and so go pouring over waterfalls into a pool and down 30 feet underwater, flailing around with their paddles to get out from under the falls and pop up and keep going to the next waterfall. John Shepherd told me that he could straddle a current wall at the surface of the river, that is, an area where the current was running hard in one direction and then as an eddy running hard in the other direction, and a distinct dividing line between the two, and he'd straddle that wall and start to waggle his butt side to side and actually helicopter his way down underwater. And after a few of their squirting friends died, they decided to give up squirting because too many people died. But their experience in building their own squirt boats out of fiberglass sort of qualified them to build other types of kayaks. They got into manufacturing the so-called touring kayaks, and the next thing they knew, they were really in business, growing like crazy. And the next thing they knew, going into the early 1990s, they needed a bigger factory and lots of employees, and they started taking on other lines, the so-called recreational kayaks and the surf skis, etc. And that whole outfit turned out to be the now classic Wilderness Systems Kayak Company, which was morphed into Confluence Water Sports at along about the time that I met Andy and John, purely by accident down at Cedar Island, North Carolina, at a company picnic. And Andy explained that he was concerned about the kayak business peaking out, too much manufacturing capacity. Everybody was getting into it. So he wanted to diversify his company by adding a sailing line. They had experimented with adding outrigger floats to their touring kayaks and windsurfer sails, and they produced some nifty little trimarans with the help of their absolute maestro guy with a bucket of resin and a block of foam, Rick Jones, their first employee. And Rick produced some nifty little prototype trimarans. The only trouble with them was that when the wind got blowing, they'd go so darn fast, much faster than they could be paddled, that they turned into submarines. And furthermore, the windsurfer masts and sails could not be reefed. And so when Andy learned, you know, that I was a multi-hull nut, he said, "Gee, if you have any ideas, we'd really like to talk to you." And eventually what came out of that was the Windrider trimarans, manufactured by Wilderness Systems. Well, Andy and John eventually sold that conglomerate, really cleaned up. The Windriders were spun off into another manufacturer and another manufacturer, and they'd run it into the ground now. And yet the boats are still available. Special order. Sometimes at the Buzelli Regatta at the Sarasota Sailing Squadron, 8 or 10 of them will show up. I have 2 Windriders, a 16 and a 17. Andy has a 17. And the great sailor Mike McGarry has a 17. He had a lot to do with the design and the actual production prototypes of the Windriders. And all of that is just to say that Andy Zimmerman and John Shepherd and I have worked together for a long time on these little multi-hulls. And here we are now finally at a point where the paddle sports industry appears to be peaking out. Much more manufacturing capacity available than the market can soak up. And Andy, who has come very busy with other things like urban renewal in Greensboro, couldn't help but notice this trend in his bailiwick, the paddle sports industry. And so he started up a product development company. And he noticed that the only real growth area in the paddle sports industry is in fishing kayaks. And it's the old Hobie catamaran company that has made the greatest success, but they have done mostly monohull vessels that are propelled with a pedal power device, and they've sold them by the, I guess, hundreds of thousands. There's a lot of people getting out on the water and having a good time in these vessels. Everything from exploring a shoreline on a pond out to really big deal fishing tournaments. The boats can operate very quietly in even very shallow water. And apparently, that's about the only place there's any fish left. Poor fish. But anyway, I've been bugging Andy for a couple of years about how I thought that if you really wanted a good pedal-powered vessel, that it should be a little catamaran and not a monohull. Because in a catamaran, the pedaler sits on a platform between the hulls, and the drive drops down through the platform in between the hulls. So that unlike in the so-called kayaks, where the drive unit, whether it's a fin drive or a propeller drive, it has to drop down through a hole in the boat. And that means that when it runs aground, when the propeller unit runs aground, it can't kick up very well. But in a catamaran, the drive unit can be retracted up between the hulls. And then there are the usual multi-hull advantages, primarily stability. These little pedal-powered fishing catamarans we're fooling with are so much more stable than their monohull equivalents that the fishermen can actually get up and walk around on the thing and cast without feeling like he's going to get dunked in the ocean. And then, of course, you have the multi-hull advantage of narrow hull form, which can slide through the water easily and quietly without the bottom slapping on the surface to scare away the fish. So Andy made a deal with one of the remaining kayak manufacturers, an outfit called Jackson Kayaks in Tennessee, a fairly big, well-respected company. It just happens to be run by people that used to work in Wilderness Systems and Confluence Water Sports with Andy. And this deal is for Andy's development company, his little Skunk Works, is charged with the responsibility of innovating this pedal-powered catamaran fishing boat. And Jackson will be the manufacturer. Well, we're getting pretty close to going into production on the first model. And if any of you listeners would like to see what the thing looks like, you know, we've been playing around with prototypes for months now. I think we've got 6 prototypes operating. And so there's some nice video of them operating and still pictures in the magazine called Kayak Angler. And also on the company website, they're calling them Blue Sky Boats. Have a look at www.blueskyboats.com. So as part of this deal, Andy's little company has developed a rather elegant pedal drive unit. The pedal crank assembly, of course, operates above the platform of the catamaran, and the lower unit of the propeller drive operates like an outboard motor. That is, upon striking obstructions, it can kick up. So I designed the hulls for production in roto-molded polyethylene by Jackson Kayaks, and Rick Jones has done most of the development of the platform and the connective structure between the hulls, the mounting of the seat, the mounting of the pedal drive unit, and a whole host of fishing accessories. I designed the hulls for a loaded displacement of about 250 pounds, and the weight of the boat was to be about 100 pounds. This little 13-footer is originally intended for car topping and or being slid into the back of a pickup truck, so that with a hitch extender, you don't need a trailer. Now, some of you remember that I've spoken of this project in the previous podcasts. But what's going on now has been a real slap in the face for me, man. I've learned that these pedal-powered fishermen are big. These guys are commonly over 200 pounders. 250 is common. And furthermore, with all of the fancy gear they want to take with them when they go fishing, there's at least another 50 pounds of accessory weight to be piled on these little boats. And I said, well, gee, sorry, we're all learning here. We're just going to have a longer boat. You know, coming from my sailing multi-hull background, I'm indoctrinated with the Niuic axiom that the Polynesians, if they needed a bigger boat, they wouldn't consider making it wider, they'd make it longer. And so now we got into a real hubbub. It turns out that Jackson Kayaks has 2 full-time fishing people on the staff. And we have really been standing toe-to-toe. Hey, you got to have a bigger boat? No, we got to have a wider boat. We got to have a deeper, fatter hull form in this 14-foot, 3-inch little catamaran. where the payload is twice as heavy as the boat itself. And I kept saying, no, you got to make it longer. I said, no, we got to make it deeper, fatter, in order to displace this weight at that length, because if we make it any longer, we can't carry it in the bed of a pickup truck. So they took the plug for the original hull form up to their R&D shop in Tennessee and started adding foam to bulk the thing out. And they really had at it. Boy, what I thought of was a rather beautiful hull form has turned into something else, because they not only want to carry all of that weight, they want to be able to walk around on the thing up under the front ports, that is the foredeck between hulls. They even want to put a cooler up there and stand on top of the cooler so they can look down into the water and cast from this thing. I mean, it's like trying to put the Statue of Liberty on a rubber ducky. And I was quite upset about it for a while, until they actually did that. That is, they did produce more prototype hulls with much more displacement. And I've had the chance to pedal around in the prototypes, and I'll be darned, man, it's all right. You may remember my telling you of taking the first prototype down to Cedar Key last spring and having a chance to pedal it in a real chop. I don't know, maybe a 15, 18-inch chop at times. And with only 5 inches of clearance underneath the wing, the boat did okay. The crests would kiss the bottom of the platform at times, but it didn't seem to stop the boat. Now, that was with only a 150, 200-pound payload. Now, with 300 pounds, they definitely needed added displacement in the hulls to carry the weight. And I've had a chance to pedal around in those vessels also. And, hey, it seems to work okay. They're not just flat water specials. They'll take a breeze and a light chop. Certainly the kind of conditions that most people would go out fishing in. And of course, with my background in sailing, seafaring, multi-hulls, underwing clearance has always been the Achilles heel. And the best multi-hulls are those that are designed to keep the underwing surface well above the wave crests, even in a, you know, a rolling seaway. But these little fishing catamarans are operating in a totally different regime. It just took me a while to come to accept it. So with the 14-footer about ready to go into production, Andy has got us cranked up on a larger model. One to carry two peddlers, or two fishing peddlers, two seats and two pedal drives in tandem, one behind the other. And this one is proposed at 16 feet 6 inches long, and we're intent on not making the same mistake again. This thing will have a total loaded displacement max of about 1,000 pounds. The boat is supposed to weigh something just over 300 pounds, and with two Bubba fishermen at 500 pounds, there's still a margin for up to 200 pounds of gear on board. Now, of course, if the boat isn't loaded that heavily, it'll pedal a hell of a lot easier. But a boat like this becomes pretty interesting, because by sliding the seats toward the ends of the vessel, the seats and the pedal drives will live on a continuous track that allows you to slide them toward the ends of the vessel out of the way, providing enough space amidships for two people to lie down, to camp. And what's more, if there's just one guy going fishing, he can carry along, let's say, maybe 3 or 4 lobster traps, maybe 5 or 6 crab pots, a big pile of gill net, a whole tub of trot line. Different fishing methods can be practiced from this vessel. On an artisanal level, I think this thing could be popular in the Third World with peasant fisher folk, in that so-called artisanal fishery with which I have some experience. So anyway, down there in Greensboro last week, we had a chance to put the final finishing development touches on the 14-foot 3-inch version, really get it set for going into production. And we laid out on the shop floor in their R&D shop the a mock-up of the 16-foot 6-inch vessel. And boy, it's really much bigger. There'll be no car topping this baby, man. It better go on a trailer. But it expands the versatility enormously, particularly with the ability to take two people. And furthermore, this doodad is going to carry a sail. Yeah, for years I've been thinking about a very interesting rig for a boat like this. We'll see how it comes out. Super simple, super light. Not intended for going hard to windward. After all, this thing is a motor sailor. If you have to go too close to the wind under sail, well, you can always get down on the pedals. Or, what's coming now is, you can always throw the switch. That's right, electric boat. The pedal-powered unit is designed so that the pedal crank portion comes off, and Andy has commissioned the design of a special electric motor to be plugged in to the same pedal drive so that that motor can drive the same propeller that the pedals would drive. Now, in recent years, there have been some wonderful advances in the efficiency of so-called trolling motors. They've done wonders with the electronics and with the batteries, these lithium batteries for the, like the Torquedo trolling motor. It's about as big as, one of the old VHS cassette tapes, somewhat heavier. But with two batteries, you've got about 4 hours of running. That's probably a full day's worth of fishing. And if you run them out, you can always pedal home. So Andy's got me working with Sam Spear, their masterful CAD draftsman. And Rick Jones is already working out the aluminum frame and the platform. So we're all stoked about the possibilities of this two-person tandem 16.5-foot pedal-powered catamaran for fishing and recreation and camping. It would even make a great mobile duck blind draped with camo. And what came out of all of this enthusiasm was one of the funniest things that's ever happened to me as a designer. I got to back up a bit and tell you about what happened during the design process of the Windrider 17. And this was way back in about 2001, when Rick Jones and I had really scratched our heads to come up with a way to get two cockpits in one of these little sailing Windriders. The 16-footer had been quite successful in the marketplace, but the dealers were all screaming for a two-seater. So we just about had that figured out. We were building the plug for the main hull when some guys from the marketing department at Confluence Water Sports came into the R&D shop and said, well, Jim, we've been thinking about this, and we've decided that two people's not enough. We got to carry a family of four. Oh, Jesus. I just pulled my hair, but went back to the drawing board and came up with the hull form that is now represented in the Windrider 17. And it definitely will carry a family of four. Two adults at 200 pounds and two kids at 100 pounds. And still sail well in normal conditions. Well, it happened again last week. After all of our messing around with this tandem boat, the next thing I know, Rick has devised a double crank, pedal crank, for fitting onto the single pedal drive so that two people can sit side by side and both pedal on the same drive unit. And of course, now Andy wants to put two people on the little boat, the 14-footer. Man, when he told me that, I mean, Andy, we've done everything we could to accommodate one Bubba fisherman. Now you want to put two on there. When he told me that, we were sitting down to dinner and having a bottle of wine between us, and man, all I could do was laugh. I was just reduced to blubber. But the next day, he and Rick dragged the boat and me down to the lake and put that bugger in the water, and they both got on it and pedaled around. They're both in the 160 to 80 pound range, and it was fine. In flat water, it was fine. I'm sure a lot of people will have a good time with it. And what that means, that it's just possible for these rental operations, you know, in parks and bays and stuff. They have these rental outfits that rent pedal boats. Well, the usual pedal boat drives a so-called paddle wheel, or like a squirrel cage thing, and they're very noisy, extremely inefficient, very slow. And this so-called side-by-side double, blue sky, 14-foot, 3-incher, is bound to be very popular in what they call livery service. And I guess the reason I'm excited about this pedal power stuff is that it's going to lead to a lot of people getting out on the water and having a good time. The technical challenges have been wonderful, and there's more to come, boy, when we start combining electric power with sail on one of these little boats. Oh, man, I think the real future of pedal power is in combination with sail. Of course, it's nothing new. Hobie has already done it with their sailing trimarans that have pedal power, both singles and doubles. But those boats are not also focused on fishing. With the catamaran, we've got so much more real estate for the fishermen to get up and walk around, play a fish all the way around the boat, even put a big cooler on the front porch and stand on the cooler. Oh, my God, I can't believe it. But those of you who sail can imagine what it's like to be able to just jump on the pedals at any time while sailing. In light air, sailing is so fickle, and also sailing is rather difficult to learn when it comes to maneuvering in tight quarters. Those problems, those steep bumps in the learning curve, go away if your sailboat has pedal power. And I think before this is over, we're going to have some hot little sailboats that also have pedal power, boats that'll really sail fast, but that you don't have to paddle home when the wind dies. Now, I know that we're supposed to be about seafaring multihulls here at Outrig, but I'm asking you to contemplate seafaring vessels with pedal power. I told you about last year's race to Alaska, the R2AK, that had so many of the boats equipped with pedal power, including my son's Goujon 32, a 32-foot catamaran with five people aboard achieving 4.1 knots, briefly, under pedal power alone. And partly because of the very efficient pedal drive unit, that thing was able to win the single-handed division in that 750-mile race from Victoria, B.C. up to Ketchikan, Alaska. Challenging conditions. That's seafaring. So this is not the ancient future. This is now. But let us allow ourselves to imagine the passengers participating in the progress of a once-and-future hybrid ship that can manage to get up on its foils and fly, even in light airs, with the help of the passengers. Why not? Well, it sort of depends on what happens between now and 150 years from now. It's fun to think about, eh? It's also a bit jarring, I admit. And so, next time we get together for a CaperCast, I hope I'll be able to tell you about our big deal meeting that we're having down there at the Mariners Museum in Newport News, Virginia. In just a few days, we have a lot of people coming together to see the America's Cup exhibit, the 72-foot catamaran inside the Great Hall of the Museum, a building that's 50 feet wide and 100 feet long, and this thing is up high enough so that you can walk around underneath it. It's a spellbinding display, and we're having a group of very boat-wise people all coming to see it, and I hope to bring you their remarks. Okay, here's hoping you have a whole week of good sailing with fair winds. Bye-bye.